each test playing nation runs its own coach education programs, and yet there's still many barriers to entry. You know, they're all the same actually across the different test playing nations. You have to apply to get your level three, and the level three is kind of regarded as I want to become a professional coach. That's my aspiration. So I need to have a level three certificate. There are four levels you can go through. The pain that we saw with coaches was that they could just never get onto these courses. And we experienced that firsthand with our coaches at our academy. So we decided, what about just building our own courses, you know, and providing access to better knowledge?
This is the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast, showcasing outstanding startups and initiatives in the global sports tech ecosystem. From Sports Tech X, the leading source for data and insights about sports tech, here is your host, Roan Malhotra.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast. Your host, Roan, back again. And this time, kicking us off on a new monthly theme. Our theme for the month of October is innovation in cricket tech. It's a topic that I've been dying to talk about ever since I got into the sports tech space. Cricket is a sport that's very close to my heart. But thankfully, also, the timing is good because this is gaining importance on the international stage for a couple of reasons. One, there is the Cricket World Cup, which is about to kick off as well. And there is another league which has entered the fray, the American Major League Cricket, of course, which has come to the America, to the US. And when the Americans do it, they want to do something right. With that said, with all this money and with all this new stuff happening in the cricket tech space, I wanted somebody to kick us off on this series. And who better than somebody who's played a bit of cricket in his life? You might have heard the name, Gary Kirsten. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Thanks, Ryan. How are you?
I am good. How are you? And you're in Cape Town, you just told me.
Yeah, Cape Town. Looking forward to summer. It's been what people were saying, our wettest winter in the last 40 years. So, dams are all full, lots of water available, and looking forward to some warm weather.
Yeah, we're coming to the end of ours in Berlin, but we're not here to talk about the weather. Sorry to bring that up. Instead, I want to talk about cricket tech. And for those of you who might not know, Gary, I don't know where to start. This is a bit of a fanboy moment for me as well, because Gary is a true legend of the game in South Africa and in India. Arguably, one of the best things to ever happen to Indian cricket. Not my words, in the words of MS Dhoni, who is also, arguably, for most people, one of the best things to happen to Indian cricket. Gary has represented South Africa over 280 times. He has scored a ton of runs, the fourth highest test match scorer for South Africa. And after a very successful stint as a cricketer, he went on to become a very successful coach as well, taking India to a World Cup, and has also got a couple of IPL wins as part of a coaching team. Well, one, I believe, under his belt now. So Gary comes with a ton of experience. Apart from his innings as a professional cricketer and a coach, he is also a startup founder. We're going to talk about that, his startup Coach Ed, in a minute. But Gary, I tried to do a bit of an introduction. I've done absolutely no justice to you at all, I feel. But maybe for somebody who might not know you, just tell us a bit about your journey from where you've grown up in a cricketing house to actually setting up Coach Ed, which is what takes up a bit of your time now.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I grew up in a sport-mad family. We were four brothers spread across two marriages, so two half-brothers and one proper brother and a half-sister. But there were kind of four of us as brothers playing any sport that we could get our hands on. So that was a privilege, you know, to grow up in that way. And in South Africa, we've always had the privilege of a lot of space. And wherever we could find a field, you know, we would either be playing rugby or we'd be playing cricket. My dad was a keen cricket person, passed away quite young at 60. I was 18 years of age at that point. But just before he passed away, he was the grounds administrator at Newlands Cricket Grounds, and we actually lived on the premises there. So I always boasted to all my mates that I had the biggest back garden in the world. Played all our sport on the hallowed turf of Newlands Cricket, where I was very fortunate to play a lot of first class and international cricket at. I had a 17-year professional playing career, played 11 years for South Africa, real privilege as we were back into international competition. So that was incredible to suddenly go on the tours that we went to around the world. I think I went on about 37, 38 international tours with South Africa. Retired in 2004 and then have been a coach ever since, which is 19 years now. So I've been a coach longer than I was a player. Kind of seen a massive transition in coaching and the introduction of a new format, which was T20 cricket. I never played a T20 game. I've only ever coached in it. And then through the advent of IPL, which is the strongest domestic cricket league in the world, we were able to start to see the way coaching was going to shift and how important it was for a coach to be able to look at all the factors that could give competitive advantage. And I guess from that point, I built up this kind of this career in coaching. And whilst we were in the throes of COVID, I thought, well, I've got to be able to keep coaching. And we designed and built an online coaching platform or coach education platform, which offered 3 or 4 courses to coaches who wanted to upskill. And we still do that at the moment and have a lot of fun doing it. So my passion really is around coach education. To be honest with you, it's something that I love doing. But I also enjoy being in the cut and thrust of the game at its most professional in a domestic space, which is IPL.
I think we're going to talk a little bit about your cricketing career. I don't want to focus too much on it. I'm sure you've covered it in countless interviews in the past. And instead talk about you as a coach. I watched an interview while I was looking up stuff for this recording, and about how you got the job of the Indian coach, which I didn't know was a story that, in your words, with 0 hours of coaching experience.
Yeah.
And this is an incredible story where you just got an email from Sunil Gavaskar, who is, again, a legend of Indian cricket, arguably one of the top 2-3 cricketers that they've ever produced. You get an email and you respond to get on a flight and so on without getting too much into the story. And this sets you on a journey, or maybe you want to share that story again, but this sets you on a journey for where you are today, pretty much, no?
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible to have the opportunity, to be honest with you. And I think where Indian cricket were at the time is that they had a tumultuous period of not doing well in the 2007 World Cup under their coach, Greg Chappell. Yeah. Who was an Australian, and there seemed to be a disconnect between the players and the leadership. And I think after that, at that point, they were looking for someone to complement the captain of the team that would, you know, fit the personality of the team. And that's how, in a very bizarre fashion, my name came into the hat, I suppose, because I hadn't put my name in the hat. And then I think they went on a journey of trying to understand who the new coach would be, and I think they went through a lot of different applications. And I was probably the last name in the hat, to be honest with you, before they were going to go back out and go find people. But that's how it came about, in quite bizarre fashion, and I was offered the contract pretty quickly, to be honest with you. So I think they were kind of rushed to get it done, and there is a funny story around it which we don't need to go into, but I think it was a massive privilege to be offered the position with very
little. Please, Gary, you have all the time in the world for a funny story. You can't drop us that and then not go into it.
Okay, well, if you want me to talk to mention it, it was, I think you gave it context. I got offered this this chance to go to an interview, and I arrived in India and kind of went through the air bridge and saw my name on a placard in Delhi Airport, and all the other passengers were off to the right, and I went left, and got through Delhi International Airport in about 5 minutes, which is not usual for a normal passenger. But then I'm in India in the name of cricket, so it changes the landscape a bit. And then I got driven to Taj Palace Hotel, which is a hotel I was familiar with. go up the ramp, and then they take me down the other side of the ramp, and they drop me off behind the back of the hotel, the service entrance, and they say, go up to room 501, and I'm trying to figure out why I'm being sent around the back of the hotel, and they were worried about the media spotting me, and I'm going, well, you know, I'm just one person. They don't know. They know who, a lot of people know who I am, but they won't know why I'm here. So why is it such an issue? And then I realized that actually they did know that I was potentially going to be in the country, and they also knew why I was there. So that's why it became an issue. Anyway, 5 hours later, I get put back in the car, and I get I arrive at this very fancy sports facility, which I realized was obviously where I was going to have my interview. And the first person I bumped into was Anil Kumble, the captain of the team. And Anil said, Gary, what are you doing here? I said, well, I come for an interview to coach you. So we kind of laughed about it a bit. And, you know, 10 minutes later, I go into this committee room, fairly intimidating, to be honest with you, because there was a whole lot of board official members, BCCI board official members there. Ravi Shastri was there, Sunil Gavaskar, Anil Kumble. And the first question that got asked of me was, Mr. Kirsten, will you present your vision for Indian cricket? To which I replied, well, I don't have one. I wasn't asked to prepare anything. And to be quite frank, I think it would have been arrogant for me to prepare something, because I needed to understand the landscape and understand the environment and what was required. One of my first lessons when I actually started the job is to actually spend a bit of time listening and understanding these players rather than presenting a new way of playing cricket for them. Anyway, so the second question that was asked, because I didn't have an answer to the first, was from Ravi Shastri. And he said, well, Gary, why don't you talk to us about how you as a South African team, you know, devised a strategy to beat the Indians. We had had quite a lot of success against the Indian team. So I thought that was a good icebreaker, and I answered it in about 90 seconds, all the same sort of stuff that we, you know, that we do all the time. And next thing, one of the members of the board slips a piece of paper across the table and says, you know, Mr. Kirsten, we'd like to offer you a contract. Would you sign? So I kind of look at the contract. No one's saying anything. And I'm kind of looking for my name on the contract, and I don't see my name, but I did see Greg Chappell's name, the previous coach, you see. So I slid the contract back and I said, sir, I think you've given me the wrong contract. So he kind of looks at it. He takes out a pen, scratches out Greg Chappell's name and writes my name on it, and then gives me the contract.
As you do.
Yeah, he gives me the contract. And, you know, on the back of that, I was under pressure because, you know, I needed to make a decision. And I asked if I could have some time to go back and chat to my wife. And I said, how long do you want? And I said, well, can I have 5 days? I said, cool. And I didn't realize that in India, when you, you know, when you show intent, that's pretty much enough. You know, you don't need to do anything else. Because the next day when I woke up and I turned my TV on and I flicked across the 7 or 8 news channels, my face was on every single one of them with the title, Our New Indian Coach.
Fair enough. All right. Yeah, just a not no is a tacit yes, basically, in that situation.
So just showing intent was kind of how I landed the job.
But I mean, thank you for indulging me with that story. I heard it just this morning. I was like, I didn't know. As somebody who grew up, kind of cursing you a bit because you just did score a lot of runs against us in India, against India, and then saw you on the shoulders of these all the athletes that have grown up supporting as you walking around the Wakhede with the World Cup trophy aloft. Incredible moments that you are indelibly ingrained in the minds of every Indian cricketer. And that story to happen like this, in this way, it is just such a bizarre movie.
In many ways, you know, like the one thing I've got to compliment them on is they were trying to match, you know, a personality to the team.
Right.
And, you know, the thinking was that through various connections that they had with other people, I know Sunil had, especially in the commentary box, my name cropped up as a good personality for the team, and they were actually spot on. I mean, that's my personality was actually well suited to what the team was requiring, bearing in mind it was a lot of senior players in the team who were in their own individual right very successful cricketers, but they weren't connecting the dots as a group of people. And they were looking for a personality that would work with a team, and they actually got that spot on.
And maybe that's something that you talk about through, and let's come to Coach Ed, the platform that we're here to talk about today. This, the personality of the coach is so important for the imprint it leaves on the team, and well, the marriage of the two. Like, you see the English team today playing a very aggressive brand of cricket and baseball, and very front foot coach, as you would call him. And other teams might be suited for different types of coaches. So is that part of what you cover? So let's talk about Coach Ed. First of all, what is the platform? What have you built? Your co-founder, Russell, who's not here today, what you guys have built together, and what do you cover in terms of tools that you empower coaches with?
Yeah, so the reason why we set up Coach Ed, and they're actually five founders, so there's quite a few of us. But we sat one day as a group of people, and we just said, you know, one of the biggest issues that we have in coach education around the world at the moment is lack of access to coaching, because all the courses that you need to go on are kind of these physical, practical places. You need to go to the facilities, and it hasn't changed for many, many years, but each test playing nation runs its own coach education programs. And yet there's still many barriers to entry. You know, they're all the same actually across the different test playing nations. You have to apply to get your level three. And the level three is kind of regarded as, I want to become a professional coach. That's my aspiration. So I need to have a level three certificate. There are four levels you can go through. And I think the reason why we, certainly the pain that we saw with coaches was that they could just never get onto these courses. And we experienced that firsthand with our coaches at our academy. So we decided, what about just building our own courses, you know, and providing access to better knowledge and to, you know, a better understanding of coaching online. So we actually took 4 years to build the material, and we created 11 modules, which covers everything that we felt we needed to, that a coach needs to know if he's working with a team or he's working with individuals. So we built the whole thing online through a series of video materials plus written content, and then we put it on an LMS system so that people would then have to pass each module, and once they pass the module, they then get the level 1, 2, or 3, or 4 certificate. We built our own levels in, which are not, you know, they're not endorsed by any higher authorities. It's just really for a coach who wants to, you know, work on his continued professional development and wants to get more courses under his CV. So everything's digitized. We've got a digital certificate we give all the alumni, and the whole thing's pretty much done online. So it's very exciting. We run, so in some of our cohorts, our higher levels, we kind of run all these online sessions, which we lecture at. We also get guest coaches in, and we create this online community and environment where people can learn.
Yeah, you mentioned at the start a level three coach, which is, I guess, what the ICC, the International Cricket Council, will recognize. And you've tried to develop your own certification level, which maybe there's a translation. There isn't. That is not the point. But the goal of trying to educate the coach, and trying to standardize coaching, as you said, maybe it's not available everywhere. So by making it online, it is now, of course, available everywhere. I was looking through some of the information on the website, and you've got coaches from literally everywhere, lots of South Africans, Australians, and Brits, of course. But I saw a Spaniard on there, some people from other parts of Africa, like, who've gone through the program. So clearly, where it's allowing coaches that might not have had access to this level of coaching to now have access, which then empowers the growth of cricket everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is a fully global environment that we are allowed to offer. And I think we've now got coaches on our platform from over 35 different countries in the world, you know, so cricket playing countries. So that's very exciting for us. So we certainly are offering a service. And we've now had on our elite course, which is our level 4, which is a 11-week course, We're now into our ninth cohort, which is we've had nine of them. And typically we normally have 15 to 20 coaches on each cohort. You know, that's gone really well for us. On the level three, we've also had nine cohorts. So we kind of over about 1,000 coaches now that have been active and transacting on the Coach Ed platform.
So maybe talk to us a little bit about the successes that you've faced. I mean, you talked about a lot of coaches who come through the cohorts, of course, but maybe there are some large federations or leagues or associations that you've managed to work with to, let's say, grow the cricket in those countries as well?
Yeah, we have. We have had a number of associate playing nations who we've engaged with that, you know, they battle to create in these educational environments just because of a lack of resources, you know. So we've been able to bridge a gap for them. You take Sweden, cricket in Sweden, for example, we've done quite a big contract with them. Malaysian cricket, we've done a sizable contract with them. Canada, we have. Bermuda, we have. America, interestingly enough, there's a big interest in the game in America. And we haven't actually done a kind of a package with the American cricket, but we've got a lot of individuals who have signed up onto Coach Ed who just want to qualify themselves up more. So, you know, the Coach Ed certificate's now got some relevance in the cricket marketplace, and we're starting to see Coach Ed qualified coaches now picking up work opportunities in various schools in the UK and in South Africa and in Australia. So it's nice to know that, you know, once they've completed the courses and got their certificate, that it now holds value when they go and look for work opportunity.
Which is important. I mean, now the growth of franchise cricket, the T20 format that we, it's a bit of fun, maybe as purists, not for purists, but you can't argue it's an entertainment value for sure. And Major League Cricket, I said in the intro, you just mentioned, has come into the US and launched with quite a bang. It was only a 2-week tournament, I believe in August, I think it was, or the end of July, actually. And did only one round, but packed stadiums, 15,000, 20,000 people, really good response, interest from sponsors and advertisers and all sorts. It feels like there is a movement. And we've seen franchise cricket, America's the latest place that it has come to, but in the big cricketing nations, India, Australia, South Africa, the West Indies, Pakistan, Bangladesh, everybody has their own kind of elite level franchise cricket league. So therefore, the demand for coaches, I would also imagine, is growing through franchise cricket. Do you see that as a trend?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've nailed it. I mean, there's definitely a bigger demand and there's more opportunity for a coaching career, you know, around the world. And, you know, the important thing is that the coaching is now not is not reserved for, you know, the ex-player who wants to stay in the game anymore. Because I think coaching demands a lot more than that. There's a lot more skills required, number one. And then number two, I think the exciting bit about franchise cricket is that it opens up doors to associate nations. So you think of America, you think of Canada, they've got a really nice league going. The Emirates have got a nice league going. UAE. You think of... a lot of different countries in the associate space that are building successful leagues for themselves. So the opportunities are massive from a coaching perspective.
Good timing for you. And then post-COVID again, right man in the right place. Excellent stuff. And I want to hear a lot more about Coach Ed, but now I'm going to shift to cricket tech as an overall space and how the role of technology plays in either you delivering your program, which is online, so that's fair, but actually in the program itself, how big a role is it as part of the, let's say, coaching curriculum that you're introducing to these new coaches?
It's becoming more and more relevant, Ryan. You know, and I think cricket has probably been, you know, a little bit behind the times when it comes to the use of technology to, you know, for a team to find competitive advantage. You certainly see in the American sports it's been used significantly over a decent period of time. Certainly a sporting code that we're really familiar with is rugby union in South Africa, and they've used, you know, analytics and data and video analysis to a, you know, to a massive degree as well. And I think cricket's kind of been a bit slow on the uptake, but it's definitely on the rise. And certainly from a coaching perspective, I think we're realizing the importance of where we can find competitive advantage by how well we decode the much of the data that is available to us. I still think that the data is going to be used most effectively by your leads, and that's your coach and your captain. And the coaches are now becoming much more open to using information to help formulate strategy, rather than just relying on instinct and gut feel and kind of what the game has given us over many, many years. And I'm a classic case in that. I mean, I started coaching when there was very little use of analytics and data to build strategy. And then, you know, through the years from 2008 through now to 2023, I'm kind of living in a coaching world of short format cricket where the science of the game is becoming much more relevant. So we are, you know, we are now building a lot more thinking and strategy around what the data numbers are giving us, but at the same time, integrating it into, you know, the bigger picture rather than, you know, it is the way, the truth, and the light. I think there's still you're still dealing with human beings, and human beings still make, mistakes that algorithms and AI can't necessarily pick up, but we're certainly moving closer towards integrating technology and data in such a way that it's useful for us to build strategy and win games of cricket.
And we've seen this across sports. Cricket, as you said, is still in its infancy with tech and, well, let's say data-driven decision-making. Let's put it that way. But we've seen this a lot in all other sports that have gone through this life cycle where every team, every athlete needs a data translator. Effectively, so how do you, somebody who can convert numbers in a spreadsheet or a piece of paper into actionable insights that I can use to improve my game and perform on the field? A, of course, that's a part of, a part of the coach's job now to be that interpreter, to do this translation function. But B, also there is somebody on the technical side who has to feed the coach. Correct. Because the coach suddenly doesn't become, a technical analyst. So is that also part of the role now, to understand that the coaching team needs that role? Is that a new role that I think we've seen this in cricket over the last few years, that every team travels with an analyst and there's somebody in the background sitting on a laptop while the field of play is going. Is that also part of the remit, that the coaching staff requires a bigger, beefier team behind them?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, some of it's done remotely as well. So we will contract with companies that can offer us a bank of data after a game, for example. And then it's up to us as coaches, as you rightly say, to build that relationship with your analyst and to say, okay, the analyst needs to know he's going to get a bank of data. Okay. He needs to sit with the coach and say, okay, what is the information that we think is useful information and that you can use? You know, we've got 2 days between matches, let's say. And after a match, I will receive, in the IPL, I will receive, a bank of data. I go through the game again on video. And then the analyst, if I've got a good relationship with him, which I do, he knows the kind of information that I'm looking for. I need to then share the information onto the head coach and the team and the players. And we do that through a series of meetings. And then whatever video I potentially need from him, that will be presented as well. So the relationship between your analyst, who essentially is dealing with the big bank of data, he then executive summarizes it, and then I take it to the players to work on our KPIs and to, you know, understand where we're at. So that's how we use it. And then I think the most important thing is that we are building our KPI plan based on what data is available to us so that we can build a stronger team strategy. And it's all based on what our skill sets are. So I'm looking for information that aligns with our skill sets. And then if you can do that, then we can play to our skill sets rather than we building a plan that is outside of what we're actually capable of doing or we have the potential to do, which I think gets really – then it gets really exciting, because then you can then there's a real sync, I think, between what the analytics are telling us and what we can deliver on.
Stay up to date with all things sports tech and sign up for our newsletter. You'll get a monthly breakdown of the most important developments in the global sports tech ecosystem, paired with exclusive interviews with industry leaders. Get all of this and more delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up today at sportstechx.com.
And this sync that you're talking about, I think, is obviously specific to each team's needs. A quick story here from my side. I was at a conference in Barcelona a couple of years ago where you had the head of the performance analytics team from Liverpool FC and from the Houston Rockets and a couple of other guys on stage. And they were talking about how this connection between the analytics team and the coaching team works. And I found it really interesting that the Liverpool guy, the head of analytics there, was talking about, I don't interface with Jurgen Klopp at all, the coach of Liverpool. I don't even talk to him. We talk to the recruitment team or we talk to one other. So the coach wanted to create a bit of separation that I don't want to have too much data. That's my personality. I don't want my players to have too much data. We want our data to go into recruitment and some of it to come into the coaching staff through the right channel. So there was no direct interface between the team and the analytics team. Versus the Houston Rockets, he was saying we're the complete opposite. Our analyst rides the bus with the team when we're traveling, you know, on the flights, on the buses, when you're traveling, staying. But players, whoever wants can go down, sit down with him. So that it's super open. The coach says, whoever wants to go, go. Jurgen Klopp's kind of protective approach is, I don't want people's minds to get filled up with too much data and, you know, keep a clear mind, I guess. Then there's nothing wrong with that philosophy, as long as you use data in the right way. Versus the Houston Rockets are saying, take it. Whoever wants it, get it. It's there. It's free. It's yours. Now do with it what you will. And they're trusting their players. So lots of different approaches, and you have to find what works for you with what works for the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's nice to have those different approaches. I think in cricket, we certainly allow players to go and access whatever information they need to access. There's no hiding from that. You know, and also we expect players to have done their homework, so they need to know within their skill sets what are the kind of relevant things that they need to learn as well along the way. So we certainly create an environment as best we can for that. I want to take it to the next level next year. I want to formalize that a little bit. So I want to have what we call, I don't know what it would be, tech hour or video analysis hour, whatever it is, where players actually come to a formal area and there'll be you know, analysts available plus coaches to discuss things that data is telling us and that the players can learn. So it forces their learning opportunity to be a little bit more formalized rather than we just leave it to them, you know, to do that. And then I think the other component of that is you know, recruitment's a separate thing. So we use a couple of different companies to understand recruitment, mm-hmm. and each company offers something slightly different. So you've got to go to the ones that you trust, you know, and that can work for you. So we do that separately. But I think when you're in the tournament itself, the most important thing for me is I think that players need simplified information. So I think technology and analytics and any information that you're trying to acquire to build your strategy should be layered. And by the time it gets to the player, it's the executive summary. It's like, this is where we're at. These are the things that we're learning. These are the things that are important to us. So let me give an example. We were tracking certain KPIs in the IPL this year with Gujarat Titans, and we weren't only tracking it. We were also ranking ourselves against other teams, And then what we were able to formulate in four games is just a nice little sample size of what we were tracking and what our KPIs, how we were tracking on our KPIs then, but at the same time, where we were ranked in the competition. And we were able to pivot our strategy after four games in one or two phases of the area that we're looking at in a T20 game. And we were able to make a significant shift. And that strategy shift actually helped us significantly in the tournament. So that would be a good example.
And that's a great story because numbers without context are nothing. Everything is relative. And it doesn't matter how fast you run unless you're either... You only know how fast you're running when you're comparing it to somebody else who's running next to you.
Yeah.
You're running the same
race. Scary thing is that because you're mid-tournament and you're trying to build up your plan as the tournament's going along, we needed four games to get kind of a decent sample size. Anything less than that, and then you go to the players and say, guys, listen, I think this is an area of the game that we need to get better at. It's not credible enough until you've played enough games to prove it. Because that's what you're doing in the end as coaches. You're actually proving the strategy to the players and you're saying, okay, or building a compelling case to say, guys, we need to think of this phase of the game differently. And once you can build the argument up as a coach and you get the buy-in from your senior players and you can put it and then you can introduce it into your strategy.
And this is what I love about the parallels between the sports world and the startup world. I mean, you can apply it to many industries, but a startup essentially is continuously hypothesis testing.
You have
a theory, and you have a hypothesis that, hey, we think this will do well. Now, you have to have the patience to give it enough space. You can't kind of knee-jerk after two games and said you've got to throw it out. No, you have to give it a bit of space to breathe and then identify and then act quickly.
Yeah.
And then say, okay, fail, success, and move to the next hypothesis. Then this repetitive, continuous process,
We're actually going through that with CoachEd at the moment because we're wanting to gain more traction in the Indian market. So we are trying different methods to allow us to build up our leads and then to be able to convert our leads, you know. So we're building up some nice leads through an AI product that we're dabbling with at the moment. Mm-hmm. But we're in the testing phase. So we're going, okay, that works. Now what's not working? Now how can we get a stronger conversion rate? You know, what are the things that we need to do and try? What are the potential leads saying to us? What are they telling us? You know, and it's quite fun to understand, like, through the use of the data, where it's working and where it's not working.
Absolutely, this is the opportunity to get creative and be creative.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of that's why I love entrepreneurship. It's great fun.
It is. Okay, so and that was a nice segue actually from my next bit that I want to talk about, which is new technology that you're excited about within the cricket space now. There's been a wide spectrum of things. We've seen quite a few devices, a little bit of some wearable tech, little either stickers or attachments on cricket bats, which are giving you, again, a bunch of data on what's happening in and around the bat. There are some who have been talking about a smart ball, and yet to see a credible one, I guess. Sleeves, all sorts of wearable devices, bails, some equipment. So one is smart cricketing equipment is one area. AI-driven analytics, I can imagine, is another area. What areas are you most excited about, either from a coaching perspective or from a player side, say, something that will impact, say, grassroots cricket and the growth of it overall?
Yeah, I think you've mentioned a few there. I mean, from an individual perspective, I'm really interested to understand how technology can help us with bat swing, can help us with power. Maybe the biomechanics of how the body works, and I think there's a great opportunity to engage with those that are designing and developing these technologies to be able to understand that better, and then potentially to be able to influence those that are developing athletes to look at these certain areas, specifically within either bowling quicker, power as a batsman, because the franchise game asks for power. Anything biomechanically or anything physiologically, I think there's some great opportunities there. Yes, and you mentioned a few technologies there which I think are helping. But again, you know, how as a coach can you use it to you know, to affect change, I suppose, or to build a compelling case for guys to go down that route. I think what we are seeing in T20 cricket now is we're seeing this real interest in power. Mm-hmm. And so any technologies that can showcase or build a compelling argument that tells someone that if you swing the bat in a certain way, it's going to give you more power, or if you build up your strength in a certain area, that's going to build up your power. Anything around that, people are going to be interested in.
And so this is happening at the elite level. Do you think it's the same technology or solutions which are applicable at the juniors level as well? Like an under 14 cricketer, should they be conscious of, hey, how, what my stance is and what my bat speed is going into a big shot as I'm opening up?
So if he sees what the professionals are doing and he knows that that could be where he ends up, then he absolutely will look at the technology. Let me give you an example in rugby union, which we have here in South Africa. It was about 15 years ago that, the game changed significantly enough because everyone was watching the professionals and saying, well, every individual now is on proper weight training programs. And, you know, you're suddenly getting every player now is over 80 kilograms. Your forwards are up at 100 kilograms. So what's happening at junior level now, I mean, even my son who's 16 years old, he's on a weight program, you know, because he realizes for him to compete with everyone else, you've got to be at that level. So I think that's an example of any technologies that bring in a compelling argument for a player to look at that, you know, they're going to go for it. My sense is that, you know, they will. The other technology that I would really like to see brought into the game, which I don't think is done enough, and we see this at the professional level, is like, why can't a coach communicate with his players?
You know, even on field, live during play.
Yeah, or communicate with his captain. You know, like, surely we've got to a point, because you're seeing it in other sports. I mean, it just drives me mad. Like, we're in a pressure moment in an IPL game, 100,000 people in the stadium. Captain's not sure which bowler to bowl. And, you know, we have to do sign language on the side of the field to get a message across. We've not got to a point where, you know, we can just speak to him on an earphone or something. This is what we think. Because also we've got real-time information coming through the analysts. The analysts have access to that. So we can make a decision as a coaching staff in one ball that could turn a game around. But we're not allowed to get the information out on the field. It's crazy.
I mean, this is like, I guess, not a technology problem, because we all, like, a lot of cricketers are on the field talking to commentators as a fan engagement thing, and to be in, so that's already there.
Yeah.
I guess this isn't the laws of the game thing.
What I keep hearing from the powers that be, it's all around match fixing, you know, and the dangers of what it
brings. Like, that's channel being tapped into.
Yeah, exactly. What I don't understand is, then how can they use it in other sports? Because there are these issues in all other sports. I mean, there's gambling in every sport. You know? So, like, how come we can listen into, or a coach can communicate, you know, with these players in other sports? It doesn't make sense to me. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
In baseball, they still use sign language, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I mean, again, they've tried to move forward with it. American football, the coach is communicating with his quarterback. Wow. So you limit how much sign language. Baseball, I can tell you, actually had a controversy where there was a team that was caught interpreting, let's say, the communication that was happening on radio. So there is a challenge. And maybe you're right. There is a technology issue, how secure you can keep this communication, especially in a high, high pressure environment where the stakes are so high. But fair. Okay. I think that's a good one. Well, keep an eye out. I've seen a couple of solutions like this come into football, into soccer.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, because the field of play is much wider for a coach to get across a piece of communication to, I don't know, left back on the other side of the field is, your voice is not going to carry that far. So I have seen a couple of solutions which will either be a earpiece or a little speaker strapped to the vest, which is allowing at least one-way communication, if not dialogue, but at least you can get a message across. But of course, this is only for training and such now. Nothing.
Yeah, and I think as well, Ryan, there's some quite good work going out with guys that are developing technologies around real game ready or real time game scenarios, so guys can train under pressure.
Right.
You know, which I quite like. I remember it was actually in Germany a few years back, where I got invited to go to a soccer club that had produced a indoor kind of training facility which replicated a match situation. And they basically created these speakers that would have the noise of 70, 80,000 people in the room as you were prepared to take a penalty kick. I thought, like, geez, that's really cool, you know. So I think there's more of that going on. I know we've got simulators that players can now start to use, which are much more accurate now, the simulators, through the algorithms and everything. So, a bowler can run up and bowl in a net situation, execute a ball that he thinks is the right ball to execute with the result being almost like an algorithm result of this is what's going to happen. And I think once those technologies come in from a training perspective, it's going to be really cool to, you know, for players to train that way. So like a batsman will be facing up to a bowler, and we will know exactly what ball is going to be bowled, and the batsman can actually train that. So I think once it starts getting to that, it's going to be really interesting.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like the simulated environments thing. Last thing on the new technology piece, anything around augmented or virtual reality that you've seen, which you found interesting?
Probably just what we've spoken about, just more the, you know, you're getting into these environments where you actually have, you can almost see the match in front of you. So I think there's more of that. I mean, I know there's headwear technology that's already been brought in for that. Again, you know, is it useful and is it being used extensively in professional team environments? I don't think yet. But certainly we're heading in that direction. And I think once you do get that tie-up and that link where you see other players or coaches saying this is really useful and this can make a difference to our training, or it can make a difference to our strategies, or it can make a difference to even, you know, a pre-match, like on the day, match day preparation. It might even assist in that, where a player goes into – you know, a back room and prepares himself for what he's going to be faced with at that moment. You know, he might be walking into bat in the 16th over, and he can actually be trained up with some eyewear or something that is helping him prepare for that moment in real time. And I don't think that that's far away. And I think you will find that now. You'll get to a stadium, and instead of, you know, your next batsman sitting in the dugout, he's actually in a room, the back of the stadium, and he's preparing himself for what he's going to be confronted with in the match. So I think that's not far away, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, sounds fun. Sounds fun. It sounds like this is the kind of stuff that you want to be in the experimenting room.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
When they're testing out this kind of stuff and put on these weird headsets and these little suits, and let's be the guinea pigs for it.
Yeah.
Good stuff, Gary. I'm really glad we covered a lot of good tech. That might become the future of cricket now, or maybe down the line. Let's talk about the future of Coach Ed. What have you guys got lined up over the next 6, 12, 18 months? You'd already mentioned India as a market that you're looking at, maybe the US. What else have you got coming?
Yeah, we've got four significant courses that we are selling on Coach Ed at the moment. And I think for us, it's just to we just want to build our base out as much as we can, and certainly go into these different environments and prove that we can actually scale coach education. Mm-hmm. And so it's an interesting time for us. We've been around for nearly 4 years now. And for us, you know, we need to prove to potential investors that we've got a product that is potentially scalable, and that we can, you know, we can create coach education access to a broader environment. So we're doing that with our current courses at the moment. In terms of new stuff that we are looking at, we are really interested in building a coach directory, which is accessible to everyone around the world, a digital coach directory. So you plug in your details into our environment, and that gives your details access to any cricket environment in the world.
Is it for recruitment?
Yeah. So we're designing that at the moment, and we're not actually far off that being able to activate. So that's one area. And another area that we're looking closely at is compliance, coaching compliance. So we feel that every coach should have some form of a certificate before he can actually earn a living out of coaching. So we're engaging with authorities in trying to understand that compliance element. And we've engaged with a very, very interesting company here in South Africa who have created safeguarding compliance and built an online course that we want to partner up with to make sure that every coach is safeguarded compliant as well. In other words, understanding how to working with minors and vulnerable athletes in any way and making sure that they're doing it the right way. So that's all done online as well, all those courses online. So we're kind of playing in that space a bit. And we're having a lot of fun as a startup business, realizing that 4 years we're still in the startup space and just working out ways that we can have access to a greater audience.
4 years, you're still a baby, Gary. You're just about finding your feet.
Listen, we've had our first round of funding already, and we've given away some equity in the business, which has been exciting but quite nerve wracking as well. So we're walking the journey of a startup.
Hey, if you close around the funding, then you're off and running now. Now it's off to the races.
Yeah.
So just congratulations to you and the team, of course, in executing that.
Yeah.
Any details you want to share or any other, let's say, call to action for our listeners who are maybe come from a cricket background, or the vast majority might not come from a cricket background. For partnerships, anybody who's interested in learning anything about coaching or wants to take this to your association, clearly, these are the guys for it. Gary, what's the best place to reach you or the team? Is there an email on the website that people can reach out to?
Easy enough. I mean, general access is www.coachedcricket.com. So that's our that's our website. But also we can also go through emails. Russell has that information if you want to give it out as well. That's russell@garykirsten.com. From there we can reach out to whoever needs to either make contact with us or we can contact them.
Yep, that's Russell with two S's and one L at GaryKirsten.com, and we'll put all of these details in the show notes. Gary, I've taken you a little longer than we had initially planned, but I'm glad we got to do it. It's really been an honor and a privilege to have you on our show. Thank you for taking the time. I do have one last question, if you'll indulge me. It is my favorite question to ask. It's the one I always end the show on. I like to believe we're sports fans first for choosing to work in this industry. And I'm dying to hear what has been your favorite sporting moment.
My favorite sporting moment... I've often asked this question, but I would say, my most enjoyable experience as a cricket practitioner was the 2011 World Cup, and just being with the Indian team.
And you're not just saying that because I'm Indian.
Just being there. Yeah, I just think the whole journey. And then I think what it's allowed me to create, to venture out into a foreign country and to have had a three-year experience like that and then ending with winning the World Cup with the team, and then the follow-on from that, just being involved in IPL and having gone back to India probably over 50 times now, where I need to call India my second home, has been from a cricketing experience as rich as you could ever have.
Gary, you are honorary Indian, honorary legend, honorary whatever you would want. I think India would bestow upon you very, very happily. Once again, thank you for making the time. Today has been one of those days. I love what I do. I'm very privileged to work in the sports tech industry. I have to tell you, the entire Sports Tech X team was very excited when I broke the news that you'd be joining us, and they've been getting messages and and how you've done and we've prepared. But from all of us, thank you for taking the time. Today's one of those days that certainly, I'm very happy and it's been a great day of work. Thank you for joining us, Gary.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, guys, that is a wrap for the first episode. It's only the first in our series of our focus on innovation and cricket tech, remember? For this entire month, we're going to be talking about all the cool stuff that's happening in cricket tech. Gary covered a lot of very interesting topics from coaching tools to analytics to wearable devices. We're going to get deeper here. We have a startup lined up. We have an investor lined up, maybe even somebody from the MLC. Stay tuned to find out. See you guys next week. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast with Rohan Malhotra. If you like our show, let us know and leave a review. And if you want to know more about us, check out sportstechx.com, where you can find our latest industry reports and updates. For a deeper dive into all things sports tech, check out our comprehensive database, SportsTechDB, at sportstechdb.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find us at SportsTechX on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Join us next time for another insightful conversation with a leader in sports tech.